So stress causes belly fat.
As a survival mechanism, it will help you to store fat around your abdomen. So, you know, again, in the cave, if you were potentially going to like not find food for a month, then if you had extra fat around your abdomen, you could digest that and survive till you could find food. So with my clients in financial services, it got to a point where as soon as I walked into the room, they just lift their t-shirt up and say, now you know how I've been in the last month. And then I had a really, really funny incident when I was speaking at a bank and the CEO's PA was there in the audience. And I was explaining that, you know, leadership stress leaks down, that that stress can lead to abdominal fat that you can't shift. And she shouted out, so he's the reason that I'm fat. But Steve, no one laughed.
Really?
Yeah. And that's when I knew that, okay, he obviously is like really stressing everyone out.
Oh gosh, no one laughed.
No.
Through fear or something, or just because they all just thought it was true?
It wasn't funny. It was true.
Jesus.
Again, what I would see with people is that they would say, oh, I've put on a bit of weight around the middle, you know, had to loosen the belt a bit. So I've started eating less. I've started like exercising more and I still can't shift it. And again, that's when I would explain this is the impact of cortisol. As long as you're still leaking out extra cortisol, nothing's going to change. So, and like I said, even exercising more or eating better, less or differently, whatever it is, wouldn't shift that fat. You had to get to the root cause. You had to reduce the cortisol.
It also made me think about when you consider promoting someone in your organization, mm-hmm. you have to be very careful that if you put a particularly stressed, cortisol leaking individual high in the organization, there's going to be a significant impact for everyone below them.
Yeah.
Is that accurate? Is that an accurate observation?
Yeah, no, that's a really good way of putting it. I mean, I always think of that phrase, what got you here won't get you there, which is more about the fact that people get promoted because they're good at what they do, but they don't really get taught all the, you know, best management and leadership skills. But that's a really pertinent point. If they're a person who is stressed, particularly who suppresses stress, which some of these, you know, successful people do, then it would have an impact down the organization.
It begs the question then. So if someone's listening to this and they go, do you know what? I'm a leaky cortisol person. I'm highly stressed and it's probably getting to people around me. What can I do about that?
So first of all, if someone's saying that, half the battle is won. The problem is when people are not aware of that. But let's say you are. So let's say that I give you that list of signs and symptoms that you've got high levels of cortisol, which include things like sleep disruption, because cortisol is part of the 24-hour clock. Melatonin helps us to wake up. Cortisol helps. Melatonin helps us to fall asleep. Cortisol helps us to wake up. Maybe you've noticed the belly fat. Because of the really strong connection between the brain and the gut, any sort of reflux or indigestion symptoms are often signs that you've got high levels of cortisol too. And of course, things like irritability and mood changes. What I mostly would hear people say is that I can just about keep it together when I'm at work, but when I get home, if my kids are, you know, annoying or my partner's asking for too much, I just snap. So that means you're like one step away from snapping at work if somebody like pushes you too far. So that's not good. Because cortisol is pro-inflammatory, it's very drying of the system as well. So you might notice that your skin's really dry or you've got skin problems. Your skin isn't just the physical border of your body, it's the psychological boundary of your body too. So often stress shows up in the skin. Then there are two main things that you can do. One is physical exercise, because you can literally sweat cortisol out of your body. So you can sweat excess cortisol out of your body by doing aerobic exercise. The other one is journaling. So writing out what's on your mind rather than just let it be in there and keep going round and round. Or if you've got a therapist or a trusted friend, speaking it out loud. So it's all about getting cortisol and or the negative thoughts that are associated with your stress out of your brain body system.
I've had a real revelation in my life over the last maybe 6 months about sleep. Mm-hmm. Again, it's why I said, I think before we started recording, that I don't have any meetings scheduled before 11 a.m. and I sleep with my eye mask on and I just wake up when I wake up.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've never really met anybody that has that. It is a privilege, I have to acknowledge that not everyone can do because of work circumstances or whatever else. But the importance of sleep. You're a neuroscientist.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who have dysfunctional sleep. We live in a world where I feel like it's increasingly difficult to have, you know, great sleep. Mm. How important is that for the brain? And also, you know, we were talking about stress there, but for containing our stress levels.
It's so important. I can't stop going on about it. And I do understand that for some people, it's not a choice, that they just don't sleep well, or their sleep gets interrupted because they've got young kids, or they do shift work. So I'm not particularly talking about the people where there's a reason that you can't sleep in this way. I'm mostly directing this out. If you have a choice, this is the way that you need to sleep, and this is why. If you don't have a choice, there are some things that you can do to mitigate it as well. I mean, obviously I have done shift work as a junior doctor in the NHS, and I travel a lot, so I'm like jet lagged half the time. Mm-hmm. But I try to do everything I can to make that as good as possible. And the reason is, we've always known that when you sleep, you lay down your memories and new learning, you process your emotions, the cells in the body regenerate themselves. We've known that for a long time. That's never really been enough for these very driven CE level people to want to give up 8 hours a night to sleep. You know, it's if they feel they can get by on 4 or 5, then they'll rather do that because they've got so much to do. The ideal is 8 hours and 15 minutes in population norm studies. So that doesn't mean it's for everyone, but for most people, that's the ideal. Actually, sleeping more than that can be depressogenic, so it can start to lower your mood. So you don't want to really be sleeping for 9+ hours, but you ideally need to be in bed for 9 hours to get that amount of sleep. And so there was some award-winning research around 2012 to 2014 when we were beginning to understand how important the cleaning of the brain is overnight. So this entirely new system that we didn't know existed, which is called the glymphatic system. It's like the lymphatic system in your body, but it's to do with glial cells. So it was named the glymphatic system. That system is a very active kind of waterway channel cleansing system of the brain. We used to think that the fluid around the brain, and there's ventricles, which are like lakes, and then there's just like trickling areas, that sort of passively dripped through the brain overnight. We did not expect to see like jets of fluid flushing out toxins from the brain. So the exact things that we see in the pathology of dementing diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, like tau proteins and amyloid plaques and neurofibrillary tangles.
How do you say that in English?
Those things are being flushed out of the brain very actively overnight. And that process takes 7 to 8 hours to complete the cleaning. That's why you need to be in bed for 8 to 9 hours.
So it takes 7 or 8 hours of restorative sleep, or just being in bed?
Just sleep, not in bed. If you're in bed awake, you're not asleep. You know, you have to be asleep, but you'll go through the different sleep cycles every 90 minutes. This isn't in time with that. This is just taking 7 or 8 hours to flush this stuff out of your brain. So one of the things I do say to people who don't sleep well is, if you find yourself awake at night and you're not lying on your side, turn yourself onto your side, because that's the best position for this cleansing process. I actually have a special pillow that makes me sleep on my side, because I wasn't naturally a side sleeper. So it doesn't matter if it's the left or the right, but that is a better position in terms of the veins in your neck than sleeping on your back or your front. So that's one thing you can do. Oh, you woke up, you know, your sleep was disturbed. At least turn yourself onto your side.
You are always one decision away from taking your business to the next level. And a decision that's helped me to transform my business is moving over to NetSuite, who I'm excited to say are a sponsor of this podcast. If you don't know already, NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. It's reduced IT costs because it lives in the cloud, so you can access it from anywhere. And the cost of managing and running multiple systems, because it's in one unified business management suite. My team and I don't have to worry about tasks being manual and clunky. And it means that I can be more efficient and to focus on more important things like bringing you the best episodes and guests on this show. So I become one of the 37,000 companies that have already made the move over to NetSuite. NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. So head to netsuite.com/Bartlett for a free product tour. Back to the episode.